Hi, this is spoken word artist Tribal Rain.
And this is Max Parthas, host of New Abolitionist Radio, modern day slavery abolitionists. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
And good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Beth Pike. It's Monday morning. And on our broadcast today, it's going to be a discussion about child support. And you're invited to join in on this discussion. So have the number ready, 816-931-5534. And our host, Craig LeBeau is going to be talking with Cheryl Bassell. And there, she is a court trustee with the Wyandotte County, Kansas Court Trustee's Office. And then we'll be having later in the show, as always, our calendar of events. That comes in the middle of the broadcast. And at the end of the show, it's the 420 Drug War News. But up now is Craig and his guest.
Thank you, Beth.
You're welcome.
Today we do have Cheryl Bassell. As Beth indicated, she is a court trustee for Wyandotte County in Kansas. And she has been with them since May of 2007. And prior to that, she was for several years working in the prosecutor's office handling child in need of care cases. And before that, she had served as county attorney in some counties. And so today we're going to talk about child support. So you might have guessed that the court trustee's office works on child support. So welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Craig.
Hey, can you tell us what, first of all, start out with what the function of your office is?
Well, the district court trustee's office is charged by statute with monitoring and enforcing child support, and we also handle cases relating to spousal support.
Okay.
Yeah, so we do pretty much everything. We enforce an order that has already been entered by a judge by issuing an order to the person's employer, for instance, for that money to be taken out of their compensation, or in some cases where person's having difficulty, we might file the motion to call them into court and have them explain to the court why they're not paying. And then we also establish paternity. So we're a busy office. We try to assist people with establishing an order when one hasn't already been entered by the judge.
All right. And when you say establishing paternity, would that be limited to the cases where they are not married, or would you ever do that in a divorce case?
Well, it's for the most part in cases where they're not married. And I don't know if you're aware that in the United States now, we have reached the point where 51% of the children born in this country are born to parents that are not married to each other. So so we do establish and initiate those actions. And we initiate them most often on behalf of mothers who come in. But we do a lot of those cases at the request of a father. And that usually happens when there's issues about parental access. So people get into an argument about when the visiting time is going to be, and or, you know, the father feels like the child is being withheld from them. We do get that case on file and give them an opportunity to get in front of a judge to, you know, say what they, you know, need and want, and kind of defend their own rights as parents for access to their child.
And the court trustees, I know we have in Wyandotte in Johns County. Is it in every county in the state or just major counties?
No, I think that there are about 10 judicial districts in the state of Kansas where we have district court trustees. There is a separate child support enforcement agency that is operated by the Kansas Department for Children and Families, and they have retained private contractors to do that work in all the counties. So, for instance, in Wyandotte, we actually have two child support enforcement agencies, which could be a good thing, but it also causes some confusion sometimes.
and how's it determined where a case ends up, whether it's your office or the DCF?
Well, the families whose children receive certain benefits from DCF, and those are food stamps, daycare assistance, or a check, which is temporary assistance to needy families, those child support recipients are required to participate with the child support enforcement activities of DCF. If the recipient doesn't get any of those things, they can have a choice then, and they can choose to either open a file at the DCF agency or they can come to our office. So in some cases they don't have a choice, but in some cases they do.
So if they have a choice, what are the pros and cons of each going each way?
Well, you know, what I say to people is, you know, you choose every service in your life, I think, by what kind of customer service and what's the responsiveness of, you know, the agency or the company. But DCF has they're a big system. On any given day, their contractor in Wyandotte County, for instance, I think has about 12,000 cases that they're working on. Whereas in our office, we're working on about 2,000. And we pride ourselves on customer service. We consider all those members of those families, including the payer of child support, to be customers who deserve good customer service. So DCF has some things that we can't do. For instance, if the obligor, if the payer of child support has moved to another state, DCF is the agency that can go through what's called the interstate process to, if that person moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and needs to be brought into court, the best, you know, way to reach out to that person by court process would be to go through DCF and through their interstate agency cooperation and have them brought to court in Atlanta, Georgia, which we cannot do. The other thing that they have that we don't is they participate in the federal debt set-off program, which means they can obtain the seizure, if you will, I think that's the best way to describe it, of someone's federal tax return. We do that only in the state tax return arena, the tax refund. And so sometimes people do choose, you know, the DCF contractor for that reason. Now, most of the people who are struggling to pay their child support don't receive large income tax refunds. So, you know, it's a benefit that may or may not turn out to be very lucrative. Our office also operates a little bit different in terms of our mission, as we consider it to be, is to have every member of every family in our caseload get a chance to be successful. So we tend not to ask the question, do you have a payment today? But more often, what do you need to be successful? So we have developed many, many things to assist the payers of child support, men and women, and just for the information of your listeners, in our office, there are probably about more than 20% now of our payers are women, are the mothers. So we provide referrals to job, you know, resources. We have a nonprofit organization that I helped to form, and that director is at every court hearing, and he has become very facile and effective at getting people jobs. We have a way to deal with if there's a transportation issue. You know, at nighttime, it's very difficult for some of our obligors to apply for evening time jobs because the public transportation tails off about 6 o'clock and doesn't start up again until 6 o'clock in the morning. And if they don't have a car or they have driver's license issues, and we have to be working with them about that. We also have some criminal defense attorneys who in the past have helped some of our obligors get an old felony expunged from their record that is interfering with their ability to get a good job. Help with traffic, you know, matters that have had their license be suspended. There are just a lot of barriers that come up, and we really are committed that we just get all the barriers out of the way. I don't know that there's that level of commitment about that at the DCF contractor's office. They do have some things, but you know, that's the only way I can kind of describe the differences.
And you mentioned the barriers and public transportation being
mm-hmm,
one of them.
Mm-hmm.
What are you able to do to help those people with that? Because I know, unless it's changed in the last year or two, at least out where I am, out by 82nd State, the buses don't even run on Sundays at all or holidays.
That's right. That's right.
If they're going to the Legends, which is where the bulk of the jobs in Wyandotte County is, they mm-hmm. can't get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what we created. We call it the Night Rider Program, and for the reason that you're talking about. We have vouchers for the 1010 taxi company, and they can come in and buy those vouchers for the purpose of getting to and from work, and we allow them to buy them for a certain period of time for only $2 each. So they can call the 1010 taxi, hand over that voucher, the taxi driver signs it, the person, the child support obligor signs it, and then every 2 weeks I get a report from the 1010 taxi company with the itinerary so that, you know, a person might be tempted to use that voucher, you know, for something else. And so we, to kind of keep people honest, that the company sends us those itineraries. But, you know, we have had several people use that to sort of get back on their feet and earn enough money to pay off the fines and across the street in the municipal court that have been holding back them getting their driver's license restored, their privileges restored. So it actually has been, it's for some of the people who have taken advantage of it, it's been a pretty great program.
And are any of the other trustees in Kansas, like Johnson County or Leavenworth, do they offer anything like that?
I think I'm the only one in the state that does stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Among other things that we do that are different.
So if they want to come and get a case opened at your office, mm-hmm. if they pick your office as opposed to. Mm-hmm. DCF,
mm-hmm.
What do they need to do then?
Well, there's a couple of ways that they can do that. They can either come into our office, and our office is located on the fifth floor of the Wyandotte County Courthouse, and just walk in and ask my staff, let the staff know that, first of all, either they or the other parent must live in Wyandotte County. So the only people that we can, you know, have jurisdiction over in the court is the Wyandotte County people. But they can just walk in, ask for a packet of papers. We'll send that with them as they go. And then the instructions are very clear, and they just fill out that packet, call my paralegal for an appointment. And normally on the same day that they come back in with their papers completed, and there's a list of things that they bring with them, like the child's birth certificate, Social Security card, that's all outlined in the papers. Normally the day that they come in, we prepare the petition that same day. So it's a fairly agile process. Yeah.
And if they, well, you mentioned, let me get to that topic.
The other thing I want to say, Craig, about it is sometimes people get scared or they are concerned that they'll have to pay something to get a case started mm-hmm. like that. And it actually doesn't cost them anything. They could actually just come in and get the papers and go.
And well, what about, do they have to pay a filing fee, though?
Or well, our office pays that.
Okay.
So it really is no charge to them. They could actually just get that going. And, you know, sometimes I think people are reluctant to, I hear a lot from people in the community, from the mom, let's say, I promised I wouldn't put him on child support. And there are very good reasons, even other than the payment of child support, to start a paternity case. One thing is, it brings certainty to the parentage of the child. If there's any question about it, then we have an account with LabCorp. We can set up the genetic testing to verify that, you know, the child is the child of those two parents. And sometimes that just brings some peace of mind for people. So why wouldn't you do that, you know, if it doesn't cost you anything?
Well, and I used to, as you know, do child in care cases, too. And I always felt like, even if the other parent is going to be completely worthless and never pay a dime, the children at least have the right and should know who their biological mm-hmm. parents are.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back. You mentioned residency, and one parent has to be in Wyandotte.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if I understood before that, though, that the other parent would also have to at least live somewhere in Kansas.
Well, not necessarily. We've started many cases where mom and the child live in Wyandotte, and the obligor or the potential parent lives over on the Missouri side of the state line. It is a matter of might take us a little bit longer to get the papers served on that person because we have to go through the process, you know, on the other side of the state line. But,
But then later, if you have to do enforcement using the Interstate Compact, then would you have to transfer that case to DCF at that time?
That has been a very rare circumstance. Most of the time, we are able to get people to cooperate without going through that interstate process. And there are ways to enforce the support, here in the metropolitan area. So we mostly do take those cases.
All right. So we do have a caller on the line. Caller, would you state your first name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, my name is Jason, and I'm calling from Kansas City, Missouri. I was just calling to say thank you to the guests. I've only been able to catch bits and pieces of this program so far because I'm working, but I'm a single dad, and she was talking earlier about, getting help with filing the petitions, and I ended up having to represent myself pro se. I think this was like the third time we had gone to court over custody and support issues, and thankfully, things wound up in my favor, but it is a very daunting task, and I could see how a lot of single parents out there can be scared or anxious of going through the whole process, and it is very hard. But systems like programs like this, definitely help and make it easier and. Any single parents out there listening that feel that they're getting the short end of the stick, just keep your nose to the grindstone, be the best parent that you can be, and the court will eventually listen to your case, and make a decision that's in the best interest of the child, but, you know, sometimes that'll be for you or against you, you know, again, but, you know, filing all the motions and petitions and stuff can be very daunting, especially to somebody that is not a lawyer. So that service alone sounds so invaluable.
All right. Thank you for your call. Cheryl, do you have a comment on that?
Well, Jason, thank you for your call. Listen, it is true that people who are representing themselves in these family matters really do have a hard struggle. We have filed, like I said, many of those petitions, and we also maintain paperwork in our office for people to file a motion for the court to enforce the orders that have already been entered for visitation. You know, sometimes even though the court orders the visitation, then the other person won't comply, and it's very difficult. The police really aren't in a position to just enforce your visitation. If you're out there listening, you can't just call the police, and they just can't do that. And so we have those papers. We have papers for people who need to file a motion to modify their support. You know, I always advise people, you know, come and speak to us before the thing gets into a crisis mode, whether it's about the visitation and everybody's gotten so agitated and angry that there are incidents that happen that children really shouldn't be involved in or shouldn't see. And if people get laid off, I tell them, look, come in, let us know that. Let us help you either file a motion on your own to reduce your child support temporarily, or, you know, maybe even help you get a different job. So thank you. I really am committed that every parent, whether they are the custodial parent or the, quote, non-custodial parent, get a chance to have a successful, healthy, good relationship with their kids. So thank you for doing everything you needed to do to make sure that that happened for your child.
And now, you mentioned some services if they're unemployed and helping them to get a job. If they are in another county in Kansas that does not offer that service and they become unemployed, what would your recommendations be to them as far as what they can do?
Well, you know, we have made a really good use of the resources that are available actually across the state. You know, the Kansas Job Service has offices everywhere in the state for developing contacts and assisting people with getting jobs. And I actually have reached out to those offices, for instance, in Pittsburgh, Kansas. One of our obligors lived in Pittsburgh, Kansas, had some other community services that they were accessing, but we were able to get them hooked up with the job service folks in Pittsburgh. And I believe he's on his seventh month of employment at that place. So it isn't that it's really not impossible. If you just apply, you know, yourself to figuring out, well, where are the resources in that town? I'm sure it's the same on the Missouri side. They have full employment counsel here in Kansas City, Missouri. There are things like the Women's Employment Network for Women is over here on the Missouri side, a brilliant, you know, resource that we have referred many, not only women who pay child support, but women who receive child support, and we have not been able to be effective in getting their support, we refer them and see if we can help them get a better job.
All right.
Yeah.
We need to take our first break, and when we come back, we are talking to Cheryl Bessel from the trustee's office in Wyandotte County about child support, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Now, the calendar for January 16th. The KC chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, January 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124 West, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be a sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. Corey's Network and Chuck E. Cheese are once again partnering to raise funds to help pay funeral costs of a murder victim under the age of 12 years. 15% of all food and token sales made at the register will go to the cause. You can help by dining at the Chuck E. Cheese locations in Independence and Kansas City in Missouri, and the Olathe and Overland Park restaurants in Kansas on Friday, January 20th from 3 to 9 p.m. Let them know, I'm here with Corey. There will be two public meetings to inform and discuss the recent change in Missouri statute that allows children to be charged with a felony for fighting on school grounds. This change has created a great deal of concern and confusion across the state. State Representatives Judy Morgan and Duron McGee, along with alumni of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, are hosting a breakfast and town hall on Saturday, January 21st, from 9 to 10:30 a.m. at Center High School, 8701 Holmes Road, KCMO. Please reserve your spot with Beth Walker at beth.walker@house.mo.gov or call 573-751-9469 to ensure that there is enough food. State Representative Brandon Ellington will host a town meeting on Saturday, January 21st at 12 noon at Southeast High School, 3500 East Meyer Boulevard, KCMO, to educate and inform community members of the revisions made to the Missouri Criminal Code. Both of these meetings are open to the public and will include local officials that have direct knowledge and responsibilities under this statute. You are encouraged to attend either or both events. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Now, we return to our host, Craig LeBeau, with his guest, Wyandotte County Court Trustee Cheryl Bussell, and your calls.
All right. Thank you for joining us again. We are talking to Cheryl Bussell from the Court Trustee's Office on child support. And we are taking phone calls. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call. Number is 816-931-5534. Okay. Welcome back, Cheryl.
Thank you.
We were talking during the break about methods of enforcement, I guess would be the phrase I would use. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, our office has also taken on some methods of that are available under the law but are mostly not utilized by child support enforcement offices. For instance, my office has issued executions for personal property when someone has become pretty far delinquent and we discover that they have something that isn't under the law, what's considered a homestead exempt item. In other words, something you really are allowed by law to keep because you need that. So someone who has more than one vehicle to drive, we might take that extra vehicle. We've also executed and seized four-wheelers, motorcycles, bass boats. I even executed on an investment property, a piece of real estate. And what happens when that occurs is those items are auctioned off, and the proceeds then are forwarded to the Kansas Payment Center to apply the proceeds towards the outstanding debt. I have discovered, different things like a probate estate where a child support obligor is about to inherit some money, and we have filed motions in that probate matter to take, that person's proceeds, at least, before they get anything as their inheritance. We want to see to it that the children's support got paid. We also, I always am really loath to take this option, but under Kansas law, there is a felony criminal statute called non-support of a person. And our office over the years has turned over 38 cases to the district attorney's office for the consideration of filing felony charges. And in all but two of those instances, the district attorney's office has in fact filed felony criminal charges. One impact of that is that if the person, sometimes people do start to get pretty savvy about the warrant system. So if, I'll just say it, if a person in Kansas has a bench warrant for failing to appear in court, that is not something that the Missouri law enforcement folks can arrest that person because it's not extraditable. However, if there's a felony warrant from a criminal case and the person gets picked up over in Jackson County, for instance, or up in Clay, then, that is something that the law enforcement in Missouri can assist us with obtaining custody of that person. Once again, once we've had to do that and there's a felony case, then there's an arrest on their record. There's possibly some of them have gotten convicted because they didn't cooperate with the, diversion that we set up for them. So now there's another barrier. So instead of taking away barriers in those instances, we created a barrier, which is sort of counter to what we really want to accomplish with people. So while I hesitate, I have done that, and I'm sure we have a new district attorney in Wyandotte County, and I've already contacted him and had some discussion with him about how he's going to intend to handle those.
Of course, one solution to the problem, to adding the barrier, would be for the state to pass a law that particular crime would not be reportable to employers.
Well, yes, and there's, I don't know if you know this, there is a pretty big, at least, discussion. I'm not going to call it a groundswell of support, but there is a big discussion about removing that checkbox from applications for employment. And I think the unified government is actually considering removing, that question on the application, have you ever been convicted of a felony? Because I think it is starting to be recognized that, for some people, those people who have had a past conviction of a felony aren't necessarily bad employees. They, in fact, might be very good employees, and to screen them out just for that reason is maybe counterproductive for the company. In addition, I will tell you that the man who runs this nonprofit organization has developed contacts with employers for what we call second chance employment. So we can refer someone to that employer and let them know ahead of time, this is you know, this is their situation. And those particular employers on our second chance employer list will give people an interview, give them a chance to start employment.
As far as potentially removing that box from applications, does the county have authority to pass that at the local level, or would it have to be done by the state?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think the state could maybe do that. I haven't given that much thought. I just know that there are some discussions going on, given how many people in our community are post-incarceration, and we really do want them to succeed. We don't want them to return to incarceration. So, but I wouldn't guess that the state legislature this session would spend much time paying attention to that. They have a lot of other many other issues that are facing them, and including, you know, the court's budget, the whole state budget. So, but you know, the best thing I think is, I always turn to my favorite thing, which is just a grassroots effort to start conversations with employers, and we are doing that. We really are doing that. We are having that nonprofit organization at every chance talk to employers about second chance employment.
Okay. We talked about if somebody's unemployed. What if they're incarcerated?
Well,
what do they do? Because I know that you can get a child support order.
Yes. One of the things that people do need to understand is that the Kansas Supreme Court, in formulating their child support guidelines for the calculation of child support, there is now a specific provision that says you are not entitled to reduce your child support obligation because of incarceration. So your child support continues to accrue every month while you're incarcerated. And for the most part, people come out post-incarceration with a big child support debt to pay. Now, there are some situations where the prison, the Kansas Department of Corrections, and particularly Johnson County has a residential center where people do get allowed work release, and they keep us notified, and you know, then they can start to pay their child support. Even though they're incarcerated, they can be in a work release program. But barring that, you just have to wait until they get out of prison, and then they have to start restoring their integrity with their, you know, financial support of their kids.
And let's assume the worst, that the payer, the obligor, is in prison for 30 years or whatever for a person felony, so that the likelihood that the mother, or if it's reversed, maybe the father, mm-hmm. is ever going to see a dime of that child support in that circumstance is kind of remote. So mm-hmm. the custodial parent, are there options for them other than just to go on welfare if they can't make it on their own salary?
There really aren't. And certainly, you know, if someone like that came in to see us, I probably would have a conversation with that person about, well, how can we support you? How can we have you get, you know, a leg up? How can we have you be successful in the financial aspect of parenting? But there just isn't anything. Those families are I would call them the hidden victims of that person's crime. There was in a case of a murder, someone's death, and then their own families are terribly impacted by, you know, what they did. So there really isn't a lot to be done. Wait till they get out.
Okay. Let me, if you can give us just some insight as to how the child support is calculated?
Okay. Well, the Kansas Supreme Court has the duty, or has taken on the duty, of creating the calculation guidelines, and they've been doing that for probably a couple of decades now. Every 3 years, they review that with a task force of volunteers, landlords, lawyers who work in this area, people who pay child support, people who receive child support, and so every 3 years they review these guidelines. The guidelines really start with the income of each of the parties, and then a calculation of here's the total amount of income. And what I like about our guidelines is that then we look at what is the proportion that each parent makes of that total, and then we, in a certain way, assign their responsibility, financial responsibility for the care of the kids in proportion to that, those percentages. So, you know, if we have $5,000 combined monthly income between the two parents, but mom makes $2,000 and dad makes $3,000, then you see we're going to apportion it like that. And then other information that we have to know is that amount of cost for the health insurance for the kids, and then also the cost of daycare. So when we have the lower age kids, that usually has a big impact on the bottom line of child support. And then after we determine these proportions, we're going to look and see, okay, there are three age categories. So there's 0 to 5, and then the middle one is the 6 to 12, and then the teenagers have the top category. And as the child grows and ages, the guidelines provide for a higher level of support, on the theory, I think, that, you know, the older the kids get, the more expensive it is to take care of them.
Or they just get more spoiled.
I don't know. Maybe that's it. But you know, and then I do want to say that, you know, under the law, there is a provision that allows people to make what's called a direct expense sharing agreement. When I teach the class about child support for the court, I tell people, listen, you are allowed to do that. And that agreement has to be very detailed. It has to be in writing, and it has to cover everything, like from basketball shoes all the way down to who buys the bait when we go fishing. I mean, everything needs to be in there. Then every month or so, you have to settle up. So if you can imagine, you're going to meet with this person that you don't much like anymore. For sure, you've decided you don't want to, you know, be with them. And talk about money. You know, if you can imagine, you know, meeting at Starbucks with your calculator and your receipts every month to talk to that person. Oh, it looks like this month I owe you, you know, $19.25. Here's a $20 bill. Keep the change. You know, so they are allowed to do that. And when people first separate, they do think that, well, we'll just get along. We'll just work it out ourselves without having, you know, the child support people, you know. But then it always breaks down. It always breaks down. It breaks down the first time that they meet at Starbucks and mom says, oh, Sophia got invited to the prom and we bought a dress and we got it on sale at Nordstrom's. And we got it on sale for $695. And the other person faints, falls on the floor. So, it breaks down over cell phones. You know, an argument about, well, did that kid really need a $600 cell phone? Things like that just make the whole thing break down.
All right, we do have another caller on the line. Caller, would you state your first name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, I'm calling from Overland Park. My name is Rich.
All right. Well, what's your question?
Well, I hear all the the time from people that people are put into poverty because of paying child care support. Is there a minimum income you're allowed to keep even if you can't meet the full amount of child support? That's my question. I'll
okay. Thank you for calling.
Okay. All right, Rich, thank you for that question. It sometimes is very it is very difficult. And when we send, here's the legal limit. When we would send what's called an income withholding order to a person's employer, that employer is only allowed to withhold, in most instances, 50% of the person's take-home pay, in other words, after taxes, can be taken from their pay. Now, for most people, that is going to be a challenge to then live on the other 50% of their take-home pay. And we have many child support obligors, men and women, who really do struggle. I mean, it is for them a matter of living with a roommate, moving back in with parents. It is a challenge. The Child Support Guideline Commission in Kansas has taken into consideration in the development of the guidelines and the schedule of, you know, how much for each child, that there are two households. And, you know, sometimes it does even appear to me that I just wonder how did they, you know, arrive at that, utilizing the assumption, the financial assumption that there are two households. I know it is sometimes very tough, and we try to work with people as much as possible. There is a provision in the guidelines for people to take, for instance, a second job and then not have that income considered in a modification of child support. So the court would say, if someone took that second job in order to make ends meet over their household, then we're not going to add that in for the purpose of the calculation. So I don't know if that answered Rich's question fully, but that's kind of the thumbnail answer to it.
In cases, I had another question.
Yeah.
When we would talk about attachment and criminal proceedings.
Oh, uh-huh.
I'm assuming that is for the most extreme cases, where in most cases it would be a willful failure to pay where they have the ability.
Certainly in the criminal case situation, the state has to prove that there has been a willful failure, almost a refusal to pay the support. And the district attorney's office, I think, knows that in the cases that we turn over, we've already tried everything that I can think of to have the person conform their conduct, you know, to the law. And, you know, over the years, I think it slowed down. That slowed down a little bit, I think, because maybe people are starting to sort of hear on the street, if you will, that, you know, we do provide a lot of resources and a lot of effort to try to stop that from happening.
Okay, and we talked about, you said they start out by looking at income.
Yes.
What about cost of living? Is that something that they look at too? Somebody lives in a rural area versus a big city where it costs more to live.
No, there's not that. But interstate, like if the payer lives in Washington D.C. or New York City, or there's a whole chart of places where the standard of living is much higher, and we have to account for that in the guideline calculation.
All right. And we do have another caller on the line. Caller, would you state your name and where you're calling from?
My name is John. I'm from Overland Park.
Okay, and what's your question?
Yeah, I understand that one of the enforcement mechanisms for people who owe child support is in Kansas can be the loss of a a fishing or hunting license. And what I was wondering was if the new constitutional amendment that passed regarding hunting and fishing rights in Kansas impacts the ability to use that tool to enforce payment of child support.
Okay, well, John, you might have stumped the expert. I don't know. Let me say this. The state agency, the Department for Children and Families, is the agency that has the ability to suspend people's fishing licenses and even driver's licenses. Our office doesn't have that ability, and I don't know that I would use suspension of a driver's license anyway. It seems like that kind of defeats the whole purpose. But it's a very interesting point that you raise in terms of the constitutional amendment regarding hunting and fishing licenses and rights and the conflict of, well, we need to stop that privilege because the person doesn't pay child support. I don't know. I might try to find out that answer. Thank you for that question.
Okay.
All right. And we just have a few seconds left. So when you're, just to summarize, if, first of all, your office, it's child support, and you can do some visitation issues, you said?
Well, we keep all that paperwork. That's a whole area, the protection from abuse cases. We didn't get a time to cover. So maybe we can do another show.
All right.
Maybe you could have me back. We can talk some more about that. It's kind of interesting.
You do not handle establishing custody, though?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. So I want to thank you for being here. For those who have just joined us, you've been listening to Cheryl Bussell. We've been talking about child support, and we will have you, there is a lot more to cover, so we will have you back again.
Thank you.
All right. And next up, I believe, is the 420 drug news.
It's the 420 drug war news.
On Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2017, some 4,200 marijuana cigarettes will be handed out to spectators there to watch the proceeding, thanks to the help of Mr. Adam Eidinger and friends.
Well, what's going to happen on Inauguration Day is that we're going to raise the issue of federal marijuana legalization, and we need to get the federal government to change its policies by giving away legal, homegrown marijuana from district residents to the masses, to anyone over 21 years of age. That's our plan.
And this is, again, this is in Washington, D.C., where possession is itself legal, and giving this away is also legal, correct?
That's right. It's something that we passed by a voter initiative in 2014, and we've defended the initiative, the new law against congressional interference. We're obviously very concerned with the new administration that things could change. And while we've heard pretty good comments out of Donald Trump, we haven't heard very good comments out of Jeff Sessions, his pick for Attorney General. And we're really concerned that Jeff Sessions is out of touch and just a terrible pick for Attorney General. So we've been fighting that, and now we decided to sort of up the game and make this a bigger issue by giving away cannabis and getting the media engaged, getting the general public engaged, giving them something to participate in. Because we're tired of no action. We want some action. We want things to get done. And it didn't get done under Barack Obama. He made some progress, but overall it's been a disappointment. And we're not done fighting for approximately 500,000 people a year that go to jail for marijuana. Nobody should go to jail. No kid should be taken away. No family should be broken up. No doors should be broken down. And that's all happening because marijuana is illegal.
All right, friends. We've been speaking with Mr. Adam Eidinger. He's based in Washington, D.C., where pot is legal. Any closing thoughts or a website you might want to share, Adam?
Yeah, people can check in at dcmj.org and see what our schedule is. We want people from all across America, from Texas, wearing a cowboy hat. You're welcome to come to Washington for the inauguration, and you don't have to bring marijuana. We'll give it to you when you get here.
All right, Adam.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and the guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, or its staff and volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio page on Facebook. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website at kkfi.org. This is your engineer for Jaws of Justice Radio, Beth Pike. And be sure to tune in Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. when I host the Thirsty Thursday edition of your Morning Buzz. Our outro music is Better Man, and that's from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Khadija and the White Guy at 9 a.m. on Thursdays, and then Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 on Fridays. Up next is Beautician's Blues. That's with Luscious Lynn. And then at noon, it's Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. You'll want to stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and then Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo en Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.